Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
Okay.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Lead a pin podcast with Dan and Scott. Hottest golf podcast, whether you like it or not. Fresh from back in the day when that's a put at the park. 7 a.m. p.m. special where they played after dark. From the birdies to the focus to the losses and the win. Welcome podcast, patron to the show. Lead a pin, get busy golfing or get busy dying. Hottest golf podcast and I swear I ain't lying. Yeah. Leave the pin.
Welcome back, podcast patrons, to another episode of Leave the Pin podcast. This is a special episode all about Tot Hill Farm. If you remember back to episodes 206 and 207, I did a split two-part series rehashing my Pinehurst trip, culminating at Tot Hill Farm, which I told you about was probably my favorite round there. On tonight's pod, we have Robbie Wooten, the director of marketing, and to join us soon is Greg Wood, the director of operations from Tot Hill Farm. Robbie, how's everything going tonight?
Dan, thanks for having me, buddy. This is great to be with you. I've been a long time follower of your podcast and all of your social media postings. So it's great to finally get to spend some time with you and super thankful that you and your boys could come out and enjoy Tot Hill Farm over your Thanksgiving break and caught some good weather on the back end of your trip. You know, the first part of your trip, it wasn't looking so great. So glad it could work out and you guys had a great day. It's again, great to be with you, buddy.
Yeah, I want to first off extend my thanks for the invitation there. I mean, look, I don't know what my place is in this podcast world or social media, and I truly don't think I deserve some of the things that I get, but it was more than generous, and I can't even begin to tell you the fun that we had during that round. I got so many DMs from people that were like, hey, seems like you kind of enjoyed it there a bit, and I was like, you know, I said, look, there's no BS whatsoever. Like, it is beyond fun. And we had talked off air, texting back and forth about it, you know, just how much fun it is to play. So we're going to get into some of that stuff, right? But I want to talk first off, let's get a little history between you and Mike Strantz. For those that don't know, and I don't know who doesn't know at this point in time, Tot Hill Farm is a Mike Strantz design. Mike Strantz called it the greatest course that he built, which is high praise from an architect that deserves such high praise. So where does your story with Mike Strantz start?
Well, you know, I was very, very blessed to get to know Mike, spend a lot of time with him, really at the peak of his career, you know, when he was basically had finished up Tobacco Road. And met with him, you know, while he was finishing up Tot Hill Farm, and then really got to spend a lot of time with him and do work with him as related to the marketing of his business and helping him put his best foot forward online and also some materials and a pitch book and such that he would send to these high profile clubs. And, you know, got to spend a lot of time with him really after the construction of Tot Hill Farm up until he got really, really sick. And so, gosh, I met the first day I really spent time with him. It was at Bulls Bay, went down, they'd invited me down after seeing the work we'd done for Tobacco Road and for Tot Hill Farm, in the marketing pieces and things that we were doing at the time for those two clubs. And I walked up, Forrest Fesler, his right-hand man, is the one who invited me down. And I walked up and it was Mike and Joe Rice, the owner of Bulls Bay, and Forrest. They were all sitting on tree stumps eating peanut butter sandwiches out of brown paper bag. And I'm like, this is probably the leading golf course architect in America sitting here dirty as all get out, hands are filthy, and he's eating his lunch out of a brown paper bag. And that's really who Mike was. He was just such a low-key, humble guy. And so many folks, I think, looked at that era of his and his construction style and design style is really over the top. And they talked about Pine Valley on steroids when it came to Tobacco Road. And they said Mike must have been on something when he built this particular place and that particular place. And the reality was that's the furthest thing from the truth. And so, you know, I asked Mike, you know, when I've spent some time with him that day at Bull's Bay, I said, Mike, you got to help me understand, because, you know, all I see in the media is you're kind of off your rocker a little bit. So help me understand what really is behind Mike Strantz. And he said, go buy the book, The Spirit of St. Andrews by Dr. Alistair McKenzie, and read it, and you'll figure it out pretty quick. So the next day I'm at Barnes & Noble's. They had one copy. I bought it. First chapter says everything you need to know about Mike Strantz. It really highlights where his inspiration and his design capabilities and creativity came from, and what he tried to infuse into his designs. And so if you read that, you and you're a Mike Strantz fan, you'll fully get it. And if you're not a Strantz fan, I think it will open up your eyes a little bit more to say, huh, there's a lot more to it than us thinking that, you know, perhaps he was on something, you know, when he was designing these golf courses. And so Mike was all about building something that, you know, seemed harder than it appeared, you know, that he wanted golf courses to challenge you visually. And so when I got to spend a lot of time with him and read that book, and it just became crystal clear to me. And I mean, Mike and I became great friends throughout the process, and obviously very, very difficult to watch him struggle and suffer there at the end, and his life cut, you know, drastically short by cancer. Was honored by his wife to give his Hall of Fame induction speech to the North Carolina Golf Hall of Fame shortly thereafter, and she and Forrest Fesler were in attendance. And special night. Wish he'd have been there, obviously, and wish I had not had to give that speech that night. But special guy, enjoyed a long relationship even after he had passed with his wife Heidi and Forrest, as he continued to try to do a lot of course construction and keeping up the Maverick Golf Design business. But, you know, obviously Forrest wasn't Mike Strantz. And so they ended up doing a lot more, you know, restoration and those types of jobs around the country, more so than, you know, golf course design from scratch. So anyway, great times, great memories. You know, we did the marketing for Tobacco Road for the first 17 years, had a wonderful relationship and a long ride with those guys, helped them to accomplish some really neat things. We did Todd Hill's marketing, I think, for the first, well, after the first year they brought us in. So we were there about 4 years. And then the golf course started kind of struggling financially, you know, with the expense to upkeep a Mike Strantz golf course. And at the time, you had, like Tobacco Road, you had a love-hate relationship with Todd Hill Farm. And so if you didn't like it, you played it one time. But those that did like it usually were out of state, and so you'd get them once a year. So the rounds played there just were never that great. I think the most they'd ever played was about 22,000 rounds. And then that unfortunately continued to dwindle over the years and got, you know, much, much weaker. And thus kind of brought us to the place we are today with the new ownership and the restoration project.
Two of the things I want to touch on that you mentioned, the first off is just a visual that comes to mind. You talk about Mike and Forrest sitting there on tree stumps. And if you know anything about Mike Strantz, I mean, truly a hands-on guy, not someone that visited the property once, signed his name on a plaque, and they put it in the clubhouse. I mean, you know, a shaper, designer, walked the course or rode the course horseback, if you will. You know, to me, that's like the epitome of Mike Strantz design in my mind is him after maybe a long day of shaping, you know, just coming out, sitting on tree stumps, maybe around a fire or something like that, and just kind of BSing with his buddies. And the other thing was, you know, the Pine Valley on steroids. And, you know, everyone knows Pine Valley for its, you know, visually appealing bunkers and these blasted out bunkers and you know, carving through the New Jersey Pine Barren region. And, you know, it's funny because you talk about that visual intimidation that Strantz is known for. And so this was my first Strantz course that I've ever played. And I've played other courses where you have that visual intimidation, but it was like pumped up to a level 10. However, as I remarked to you and was texting back and forth to you, I can't believe how playable Todd Hill Farm was. You know, once you get past that visual of, can I cover that nose of that bunker? You know, it's flash face. It's blown up to the side. And it looks like you can't. You get out to the fairway and you look back and you're like, oh my God, this fairway's 80 yards wide. I had all the room in the world, but it looked like a sliver of ribbon from the tee box. And that to me personally is where Strance's genius really shines. And I'm kind of curious to get your opinion on what you think his genius was in course design.
Yeah, I think, yeah, I mean, that's a great description, Dan, because, you know, we talk about that a lot, even at, you know, Tobacco Road. You know, there's some significantly large fairways there that you don't necessarily see off the tee, and you get over there and you can land a jumbo jet in the fairway. Todd Hill's like that probably. I mean, their fairways are probably the biggest that Mike ever created. Now, I have not played New Kent up in Virginia, but I know they've got some big corridors as well. But at least from what I've seen, you know, Todd Hill is extremely forgiving off the tee. In fact, we've got footage from Strance, you know, building the golf course, talking about, you know, it's probably, you know, one of the most playable he'd ever built up to that point as well. He said, you know, here, Todd Hill, you can find your ball at least. You may not like it where you find it, he said, but you can find it. Whereas he said at Tobacco Road, you know, with all the love grass and the mounds, it's not nearly as forgiving. And so, you know, Mike, the genius about that is you've got these holes that some cases may be, like number four, might be 90 yards wide or bigger. And, but from the tee box, he just doesn't give you that look and feel necessarily off the tee. And so, well, I take number two, especially the par four up over the ridge. He's got, you know, fairway tilting this way, fairway beyond that tilting this way, and the hole goes left. Just if it were completely flat, it'd be a boring hole. But right. Visually, the way he just kind of shaped that fairway to have kind of two different angles, you know, looking from the tee, it just plays with your mind, right? But the fairway is, you know, it's some case they're almost 65 yards wide. I mean, so to me, the genius is the ability to kind of create a little fear on your shot. But as he used to tell people, if you play it, if you look at your yardage book and you see what you got and play to yardages and play to the strengths of the golf course and the play through the right corridors, my golf courses are extremely playable. Usually it's when people try to do something they're not capable of, or they try a shot they know they can't hit, and then they want to blame Strance for a bad course design. And we have that on video, him saying that very thing, you know, talking about, you know, people think they're Greg Norman. This was back when Norman was number one in the world back then. And, or Tiger probably was getting close to that, but he used Norman as an example. And you just can't come out here and think you're Norman and hit shots and then blame me because you know, you're not Norman. And so I just love, and I think that's what people, I think this younger generation, it's just so fascinating to me, this Instagram golf generation that are so keenly interested in Mike and his design and creativity, they're not thinking about, well, this looks tricked up. They're fascinated as to why he did what he did, and they enjoy playing it that way. And so to me, compared to 20 years ago when the course opened, everybody thought it was too hardcore and too tricked up. Now people realize, I think, over time, and guys that have played enough golf courses, that it's a very, very special genius that he had. And if you play the shot that he calls you to play, you can really score on his golf courses.
You know, that's a great point, because I got so many messages from people that started off with, hey, I heard Todd Hill is gimmicky. And I can kind of maybe even slightly understand based off of pictures, but I relate to them. Like, I'm trying to think back every single shot I played, every single hole, and none of it was unfair. None of it made me do something that I was incapable of, playing from the correct tees. And I'll give you an anecdote on that one, too. The group in front of us was hilarious when they saw the first tee box. but I related to people. I said, no, it's not gimmicky at all. And more so, not that it's, you know, not gimmicky. I thought the flow of the entire course was phenomenal. You'd mentioned number two, how that curves off to the left. One, I explained to people like an absolute roller coaster. We pulled up to the first tee and I looked down there. And I just was absolutely blown away by what, you know, I described to people as a wave of fairway. And my one son said, Dad, I don't know where to aim. And I said, just aim at the hill, you know, out there. and hit a good shot, and we'll see what happens. Mr. Greg, thank you for joining us. We've got Greg Wood, Director of Operations, who's just jumped on the pod as well, and we're going to get to him quickly. How was your holiday party?
Oh, it's fabulous.
Excellent.
Yes, thank you very much for asking.
Excellent. I want to finish up. I talked about people who were saying maybe it's gimmicky or whatnot. And the group in front of us, when they teed off, they were playing the back tees. You know, you go behind the starter's hut there where the bad guys are, and everything looks like a normal course in the beginning there. But you make that right turn, and you get to the tee box, and you look out the fairway, and it looks nothing like anything you've seen. And the guys in front of us, we heard them, they said, oh shit, we need to move up a tee box. and I love that, because there's so many courses that people will just try to stretch out as far as they can. And I think right off the bat, it gave them this impression like, hey, you know, you need to play the correct tee box, because we are not here to mess around, you know. And by playing the correct tee box, like you had mentioned, Robbie, before, the place becomes extremely playable and so much fun.
Yes.
Greg, I want to bring you into this here. Robbie talked before about how, you know, the new ownership went kind of above and beyond. And this is a restoration, right? No one wanted to touch Strance's work. No one wanted to mess with the genius of his architecture. So I was hoping you can enlighten us a little bit and give us some insight to what the new ownership did and where they see the course moving forward past 2023.
Well, thank you. First of all, thank you very much for having me.
Of course.
We were very blessed to have about 44 hours of video of the construction of the golf course and thousands of photos of the construction as well. So for us, it was really study the videos, talk to the previous owners, the previous golf course superintendent, John Atkins. He was very helpful in this. Dale Golf, who did the construction for us, they were very open to whatever we wanted to do in the project. And the big thing that we wanted to, the thing that we stressed throughout the project is that Mike Strance, you know, is one that recognized one of the greatest golf course architects of all time. So if Mike did it, we want to try to put it back as close as we possibly can. And throughout the entire process, that was really our mantra. We're not done by any means, but we feel like we really brought the bones of the property back. And over time, we'll continue to restore it back to the way Mike intended it.
So I had never played it prior to, you know, post-Thanksgiving. So that was my first time ever seeing it. A lot of people had messaged me on Instagram, and they said, man, if you could see it before and after, you'd be absolutely blown away. So maybe you guys can go back and forth. I don't know if either of you had played prior to that. I'm assuming both. Being in North Carolina, yeah, you probably had. I mean, you guys known each other forever. So I wonder if you can give us some insight, the listeners out there, some insight into what some of the major changes were as we, you know, moved from the original Todd Hill Farm to kind of this new enhanced version of Todd Hill.
Yes, thank you. I think the biggest thing was returning it back to its original lines. And that really involved taking out about 1,300 trees.
Wow.
And, you know, when you watch the original videos, you realize how open that golf course was. And that was really the biggest thing. And then replacing the greens with the new Prism Zoysia, that was really a big thing. And I think another key component was making the farmhouse the clubhouse. You know, if you look at the design of the club, Mike is always pointing everything back to the farmhouse, you know, 9 green, 18, as you're driving up. So once we had that established as a clubhouse, it felt like it had been the clubhouse the entire time because of the design of the course.
Can I ask what the clubhouse was prior to that?
They had used a temporary clubhouse. You know, some people do where they have a trailer, you know, with porches and everything set up around it. And so we had that removed, and but you know, the farmhouse is really neat. It dates back to the 1840s, I didn't know this prior to the project, but farmhouses, if the farm's old enough, it's usually the farmhouse is built in stages. The middle is 1840, the front is 1905, and the back where the fur shop is 1960.
Yeah, that's I feel like, you know, and Robbie, this is your area of expertise, marketing, but I feel like that is kind of primed to become an iconic symbol of the course, that farmhouse. You know, every single person that saw my videos and saw the stories said to me, well, where's the clubhouse at? I said, that's it. You know, and the inside, like my boys were blown away by the inside. They said, Dad, this is like the coolest clubhouse. And, you know, and they're not spoiled. Believe me, they work their butts off or stuff, but they've seen some pretty cool clubhouses, you know, and I'm sure you guys have too, but there's a quaintness to it. There's an ambiance to it. The fireplace inside of it. I mean, even the tile in the men's bathroom, like everything is picture perfect. It could have come out of, you know, a country living magazine.
Yeah. We Greg and I laugh about this all the time, but the owner, Pat Barber, is very gifted in that type of work. He's done a lot of that in Charleston where he lives, and he and his wife, Becky. And I think Pat was more excited about restoring the farmhouse than the golf course. Wouldn't you say, Greg? Greg would go leave for hours on the golf course and Pat would stay behind that old farmhouse. But the end result, as you said, is something very, very special. I think it's the cornerstone of the piece. As Greg said, you drive up and it's the first thing you see. You know, it is becoming and will become, you know, one of the best hangs in all of golf. You know, we have zero doubt about that. The feedback we've received thus far has been fantastic. But, you know, to see that, we had dead animals in the walls when we first uncovered that thing. I mean, it was just unbelievably bad. But you start to uncover things that got us super excited through the process, like Strand stayed in that front room when you first come in, you know, when he built the golf course. And that's where he drove the plans for Bulls Bay. And you start, you know, hearing these types of stories, and it just got us further motivated to, like, we've got to make this clubhouse extra, extra special, because we feel like, just like, you know, if you came into Todd Hill today and walked into that modular old dilapidated clubhouse, you just don't have the same feel. You're like, what am I getting myself into? Versus now, I mean, the eyes pop when people walk through those doors, and that's what we were hoping for. And I definitely think Pat and of course Greg and all the folks that worked on it did an amazing job. And yes, it could be something in Southern Living, and probably should be, but you know, there's more work to be done there, and some things we're going to be doing on the exterior there, I think, to make it even a better hang for guys when they're finished up with play. But it is the cornerstone piece, and it's what people first come into. They get the feel for the day, just like Tobacco Row's unique clubhouse, right? You walk into that, you immediately have the feel and the vibe of what you're about to experience. And we felt like without the farmhouse, Todd Hill might not work the way we envision it. So extremely crucial piece to the puzzle to make Todd Hill what it is today.
Yeah, I kind of see it as almost like an alt logo design for the course, possibly. That might be something to work on.
We'll consider that, Dan. Absolutely.
Thank you.
You know, yeah, Strance, as you say, you know, Strance drew a bunch, as you saw probably some of the stickers. I mean, we've got so many unique icons that Mike, you know, drew. And most courses that he you know, worked on, he left some of that type of material behind. And we've got some pretty neat things that we'll be incorporating as we go through the process. But yeah, the farmhouse, you know, certainly can be a part of that. Yeah.
I want to know if there was anything cool or, you know, super interesting to you guys. I mean, look, obviously we're all golf nerds here. Everyone that listens to this podcast is a golf nerd in their own right. Was there anything cool or interesting that you guys kind of uncovered, whether it be through, you know, the marketing and searching through, you know, the annals of Todd Hill, or through the restoration on the course, that kind of stood out to you and was just like, you know, wow, I didn't know this existed here?
Greg, you know, yes, there are. I'm going to let Greg speak to that, just because Greg really spent so much time digging in the research and interviewing past owners and members and looking at a ton of footage. He and I watched hours and hours and hours of that video footage. But he was out boots on the ground with that and could, you know, certainly elaborate a little bit further on that. Greg, why don't you take that away?
Yeah, I think one of the big things was we found tees, you know, like different. We found the Champ tee on 14 that we knew was part of the original design. You know, right now, from the current set of tees, is a 376-yard par 4 dogleg right. And he actually had a Champ tee that was across from 13, which is the hole prior to it, in, you know, really close proximity, that stretches out to a 462-yard par 4. And it's just a totally different golf hole from back there, and it makes you understand why certain things are in place. I think the biggest thing I learned throughout the whole process was that Mike designed golf courses forwards, but he also designed them backwards. So when you sit on the green and you look back, that's also a part of the design. And to me, that was like one of the biggest things that really hit me as we went through this process, was that Mike, it's the entire picture. You know, it's not just the fairway, the tee, the green. It's the entire picture, the entire corridor. Everything was thought out that Mike did. And it just really speaks to the genius of Mike Strantz. But it also speaks to the challenge of putting it back together the way he wanted it, and also maintaining it so that people who come can enjoy it, you know, and see it for what it is. So every time you come, you'll see something different there. You'll pick up a different nuance of the golf course.
I'm assuming it almost had to be like completing a puzzle, right? But completing a puzzle backwards, if you will.
It really was. I mean, it was very overgrown. I mean, it's a very challenging golf course to take care of, especially the out-of-play areas. So, you know, cleaning it out, looking at it, as I said, Dale Golf is incredible as far as like clearing the sight lines and putting everything in and doing everything in a timely fashion for us so that we could go in there and go back to the videos and go back to the photos. And quite honestly, when that failed us, we'd go back to the old superintendent and the previous owners and talk to them as well. So, you know, there's a lot of effort that went into it.
And Dan, I would also add to that, like we uncovered the hidden waterfall on 15, the par 3. Yes.
The waterfall, which, thank you.
You know, when you're coming up 14 green, you can hear that ripping behind 15 green. It's just, you know, such an experience, you know, and game changer really for Todd Hill. Because when I came on the scene right after they had opened, they'd shut the waterfall off. So I never saw it running. And I did the marketing there for almost 5 years. And I never knew that thing ran. And of course, Mike was so busy, we never talked a whole lot about, you know, certain nuances of Todd Hill Farm specifically. We were just kind of, when I'd get with him, we were talking about all of his projects in general and some other needs he might have. But, you know, that, when they got that all pieced back together and you played it and you saw it and it was running, man, what a great backdrop, but what a great sound and a vibe and feel on that 15 green when you're sitting there playing it. And we think that was a huge piece of the puzzle that was missing. There were, you know, bunkers, like 7 tee box bunkers were grown over and filled in. And that tee shot there, and I think, Dan, you said that might have been one of the prettiest tee shots you remember from the day.
Hands down.
Just totally changed the look of that hole, which was fairly boring off the tee there, obviously towards the end of the prior ownership before Pat took over. And so those things really, really, I think, have been a game changer for the golf course as well. But like Greg said, so much overgrowth that you were, you know, like 6 tee, the par 3, there were parts of the left side of the green you couldn't even have a pin placement because the tree line was overgrowing that beautiful creek that, you know, flowed from tee to green. And so you really didn't see, you couldn't see the beauty of that golf hole. It was just so overgrown and covered up. You could not see, it was hard to see the bones. And so a lot was really uncovered and discovered. And if you haven't played it, Todd Hill's totally different than a lot of other Mike's golf courses. It's set at the base of the Uaru Mountains. So it's very rocky, a lot of topography change, a lot of elevation change. You know, versus some man-made stuff that he might have had to do at the beach where it's much more flat coastal-wise. and just totally, totally different than anything else he created.
Take me back to 15. I'm sure it's cliche for me to say that's my favorite hole. You know, I mean, I'm sure everyone that plays is just like, this is the coolest or one of the coolest par threes I've ever played. But you mentioned that the waterfall wasn't turned on, and I like to think I'm pretty knowledgeable about most things. I'm assuming it's not a valve system. Was that creek or sliver of water rerouted somehow?
Well, the way it's designed is at above, at the very top of the waterfall, close to the road, we actually have a water valve there hooked up to our irrigation system, and that releases the water into that waterfall, and then it cascades down, and it goes in front of the green, and there's actually a giant cistern or hole that captures it. It's probably 8 or 9 feet, and at the bottom of that is a 40 horsepower pump.
Okay.
And it pumps it all the way back up, 5 stories back up to the original, and creates like a cycle for everybody.
Okay. That makes sense. That makes sense. That is visually appealing. You come off, you know, the 14th green there and you step onto that tee box. I mean, it's just one of the coolest shots. And again, you know, what this course presents itself is so many different ways to play each hole. And I want to talk to you guys about that because, Robbie, I'd mentioned to you, I think like through text we had mentioned, I can only imagine how fun this place could be if it was completely dried out in the summer and you were running ridgeline, you know, running the ball up ridgelines and watching it funnel and go mm-hmm. to and fro. So talk a little bit of that about that, guys. Like during the restoration, was that something that was given precedence, the different seasons that you go through there?
Greg, why don't you jump on that one?
Yeah, Robbie and I both saw the same video where Mike is talking to the owners about the design of the course, and he talks about how there are multiple ways to play every hole there. And I have to be honest with you, up until watching that video, I had never considered it because I had always thought of this golf course as being a aerial golf course, lots of carry. But now, after watching the video, going through this process, this restoration, you can really start to see what Mike was talking about. And there are so many ways to play each hole. And that's the great thing about each time you come back, as I said before, you see something different, whether it be a way to play the hole or something that you missed from the past. And again, it really speaks to Mike's genius.
Yeah, it was real, real interesting because if you see and you watch my boys and I play, all three of us have completely different swings. You know, even though I created both of their swings, they're completely different, right? Part of their golf DNA, completely different ball flights, completely different trajectories. So if you were watching us, I mean, it looked like we each played the course, you know, completely different. And yet we all arrived kind of at that same endpoint. You know, I'm thinking about 15 comes to mind. I hit this low runner that checks about 8 feet from the hole. My youngest son hits this, you know, beautiful little fade that checks about 10 feet to the right of the hole. And my oldest son, who's the best player of all of us, tugs his a little bit. It hits up on the top of the little ridge. And he's like, oh, he's so mad at the shot. And my youngest son is going, I think that's going to funnel down. It's pretty severe. Sure enough, we get up there and it's sitting, you know, 6 feet left of the pin on the other side. And it's just, you know, it's hilarious. And that's what makes the place so awesome. Robbie, go ahead. You had something that you wanted to throw in there before, I think.
Yeah, I think, you know, the great thing about, you know, Mike, especially when you think of, you know, the golf courses he has down at Myrtle with especially Caledonia, probably more so than True Blue. True Blue has a little length. But Tobacco Road and Todd Hill, you're talking about golf courses 65 to 6750, you know, yardage wise. People will look at that, you know, 10 years ago and say, well, it's not 7,000. It's, you know, it's a joke. It's not really a championship level golf course. It's too short. But Mike wanted you to hit every club in the bag. And I've played his golf courses where you've had to, you know. And I like playing his golf courses at different tees, even though I'm a back tee player in my advancing age these days. But I enjoy when we play Todd Hill up because I hit different, you know, clubs off tees, and it just brings in different challenges. But his golf courses are not bomb and gouge, and, you know, it's placement golf and, you know, point A to point B. It's like I said earlier, you know, trusting the yardage book and trusting your yardages and hitting the spots. and you're going to score, you know, reasonably well on his golf courses. And so that's the beauty of, you don't need 7,400 yards to create a challenge. And a lot of what Mike did, there are challenges on the ground, but a lot of it's just visual. You know, he wants your mind to be playing little tricks on with you a little bit, and just to have to think a little bit more. And, you know, we love that. Todd Hill's probably got as much or more of that than any of his golf courses.
Imagine that. Great course design can minimize distance. Interesting, huh?
Mm-hmm. Interesting thought, isn't it?
very front and center about what's going on right now.
You don't need a rolled back ball to play Todd Hill. Yeah.
That's terrific.
Well, guys, now, I need to say this, but I need to jump off.
Okay. Hey, yeah. Greg, thank you so much for joining us, honestly.
No, thank you for the opportunity. It's great to talk about. I could talk about Todd Hill all night.
Oh, I'm sure. We just might. I definitely hope to meet you sometime in the future, my friend.
Be my pleasure.
All right. Take care, Greg.
Take care,
Greg.
Bye.
Robbie, you had mentioned the different tee boxes. You know, you guys have the little man tees there, which, you know, turn everything basically into a par three, if you will, you know, and shorter on the par fives and stuff. And so I'm an enormous fan of par three courses. I mean, mm-hmm. I think, you know, I say this and I could always backtrack this, but I truly think that I could play par three courses the rest of my life and be okay with it. You know, mm-hmm. I think I could be okay taking the driver out of the bag, even though the driver is my strongest club.
Right.
I really think I could have fun on that. And Greg had mentioned before that some tees were uncovered. Was that one of Strance's, you know, initial thoughts to give just as many options as possible? Have you found anything on that? Because some of the, like, I think about three, right? I think about mm-hmm. the third hole and right. I mean, good Lord, between pin placements and tee boxes, I don't think I'm exaggerating when I say you could have 100 different combinations.
That hole especially, there's a lot of teeing ground up there, a lot of different angles into that green. Then you've got obviously an enormous green that kind of has really three big areas, the front, the middle, and that back sliver. He wanted options, you know, from the standpoint of, you know, other hidden things. That was really the only tee that I guess the owner, previous owners, didn't find that as much of a playable hole from back there. It's much more difficult, and it was hard to get back to it a little bit. And so they kind of let that tee go on 14, but we didn't really find anything else like that. A lot of the stuff Greg was speaking to was covered up with trees, and tee boxes were filled with roots because the trees had just gotten so large and taken away all the grass and just, you know, dirt and roots. So uncovered all of those by taking out the trees and put all the Mike's original tee boxes back together again. But, you know, with options really, you know, if you hear one thing loud and clear from Mike, it was, you know, he was an options guy, and he just felt like there should be more than one way to play a golf hole. And he would say that about every one of his designs. And, you know, Todd Hill, especially with how, like, if you think of 12, you and I think texted about number 12, but, you know, teeing up on the hill back down on that peninsula fairway and hitting yep. back over the water. You know, some guys have, you know, can maybe fly it up on that top tier, play it around the right side. Or, you know, some of your older players, you know, might not want to try to carry the water. They've got an option to play it around. If they hit in the right spot, it'll roll all the way onto the green, you know, around the far right side of that pond. So, you know, Mike was all about options, and he wanted you to think about that, not just step up and, you know, just flail away. And that's, again, I think getting back to some of the beauty and the mastery of his design work was he gave you plenty of ways to play golf holes. And Tobacco Road's the same way. Bulls Bay, lots of options there. It's just beautiful, beautiful to play.
I feel like it's one of the few courses that I've played that the architect truly cared about tee boxes, and they weren't just mounds, you know, big, enormous rectangles or oblong circles cut in with enormously wide tee markers. You know, one of the things I love that I think made the place feel so intimate is these tee boxes are rather small, mm-hmm. and the teeing ground is rather small. And that intern plays into the strategy in the course. I'm thinking of hole number four. So I play a draw, and hole number four was set up for a complete big, you know, dog leg right. Mm-hmm. And the tees that we had played, you know, I kind of fluttered back and forth between, am I going to go three wood? Am I going to go driver here? I ended up choosing three wood. I get out there, and again, same thing, visually deceptive. I turn around and look at the tee box, and I'm like, good Lord. Like, I could have just pounded, like, why didn't I just pound driver type deal? You know, and so I told my boys, I said, you know, the tee boxes really stand out. And they're young, so they don't see the course the way, you know, someone like you and I do that have been playing for years and years and years. They said, you know what, Dad, they really were pretty cool. And the one that I'm thinking of that sticks out, I want to say it's six or seven, the par three.
Six, yeah.
Okay, so six. Those tee boxes right behind five green, I mean, are just, they're otherworldly how cool they are.
Great. Probably one of the best settings, you know, on the golf course from a viewpoint and looking into that green and the rock formation short with the bunker that he'd put in there for some visual stimulation. And, you know, just an amazing tee box back there. And we went back in and reclaimed the very, very back part of that tee that makes that hole play almost 175 yards. You know, most of the time it was played just because it was so much shade back there and no dirt, no grass rather on the back of that tee. That hole never played more than 155 yards and really wasn't that demanding. But, you know, once we got that put back together and resodded and with some zoysia, that golf hole plays entirely different. And you got that rock staring at you down the right-hand side off the tee from that back corner. You know, it's just a much, much better hole. And so, you know, small. Mike was not, you know, just for argument's sake to say, hey, we just need to build a bigger tee box. I'm going to push up a bunch of dirt over here. He was a big believer in McKenzie's thought of, I'm just going to get what the terrain gives me, and I'm going to work with it. So, yeah, he's got some, you know, the big mounds at Tobacco Road. Those are all pushed up. And, you know, there's some of that in his properties, obviously, especially those at the beach that were really, really flat. And he had to create some movement. But Todd Hill, he didn't have to create any movement. And he just kind of went with what the land gave him, like McKenzie talks about building Cypress Point. And if you, again, read that book, The Spirit of St. Andrews, and you play Todd Hill, you'd be like, got it. Makes perfect sense. He didn't try to do anything totally out of character from what the land provided him there at Todd Hill. And that, in that case, it's six smaller tee boxes, obviously, that we've got to really stay on top of when we, you know, in peak season, a lot of play.
Sure.
And we got plenty of room to move everything back and forward, so it won't be a problem. But, you know, definitely not huge demanding like you'd see at, you know, some of these bigger resort courses today that, you know, feel like it's almost the size of a putting green, you know.
Yes, agreed. One of the things I want to touch on, because it's honestly one of my favorite things in golf, is the merchandise that's available. And so as director of marketing, do you have any say in what's ordered for the club, how they kind of go about, you know, creating the feel and look of Todd Hill?
Yes. To answer your question, you know, the great thing about Strantz, not only, you know, with his design creativity, he created a number of logos for Todd Hill Farm, and they had used one specifically that had some very scripty lettering around the bull skull that was used, you know, for 20. In fact, let me go back before we got involved. The original owner, being a horse farm, didn't like Mike's over the top logo creativity and wanted just a shield with a horse in it. You know, almost looked like a clip art horse. And I came in and I saw these pencil sketches that Mike drew for, you know, logo options for the golf course that John Adkins, the former superintendent, had been holding on to. I'm like, why are we not using these? You know? And immediately we talked them into it, and merchandise started flying off the shelves back then. Well, as Pat came in and took the golf course over, you know, I still actually had those logo sketches from Mike, the originals, here at my office. And I pulled those back out, and we looked at them and talked at length about, why don't we look at switching to one of these newer, you know, for the new logo coming out the gate with the restoration, which is why we selected the one with the horseshoe and the bull skull kind of overlapping. And it has been an enormous hit. Our challenge, Dan, has been vendors and getting product. And we're just now starting to get a lot of that stuff in, but it's a little late for the holiday season, unfortunately. But, you know, we've gotten so many requests on socials to buy all this new logo product. We're excited to start promoting that, you know, over the next couple of weeks. But that's been our biggest challenge is having enough inventory. When we have had inventory, it's gone very, very quickly, and it's been a challenge to get that back from some of these vendors. So hopefully we're kind of out in front of it now with our buyer and at the club, and those things will pick up and we'll be much, much more stocked online as well as at the golf shop there. But yeah, getting you back to your initial question, the logo was, that branding is so vital to Mike's golf courses. Why would we use something that he didn't create? Right. So when we looked at those logos, a couple of them were really too busy to be something that could be embroidered, but we can roll that out in a silk screen flag or on T-shirts, which we'll do kind of some limited edition merch drops. So Mike's given us tons of options in that, and we're super excited about, you know, really launching that stuff over the winter, heading into next spring season, hitting the ground running. And the logo and branding are everything, just like this, the deer skull at Tobacco Road and Bulls Base, you know, they've got a skull down there. Mike was into the skull thing, you know, during those 4 or 5 years, and but they stand out, right? It's you need something that's memorable, that people want to buy, and judging, you know, on the initial runs that we've had, I think people like the logo of Mike's that we chose to open up the gates here after the restoration.
Well, I can honestly say that my wife is very happy that you were not overstocked in the bookshop, because I, without a doubt, I don't want to call it a problem. Let's call it a habit of purchasing copious amounts of gifts for myself. So she was happy. Now, that is not to say that I did not drop a lot of money in the pro shop. One of the coolest things, and my boys are finally getting to the age where, you know, they appreciate kind of the maybe finer items, if you will, and they're getting old enough where they don't need, you know, I don't need five of something that's cheap and gaudy. Like, I'll get one nice thing. Mm-hmm. So my oldest son got the driver head cover with the horse hair on its brand. Every single person is just like, that is amazing. Where did you get that?
Right.
And it does. It fits the ambiance. It fits the whole entire course. And that's one of the things that will stick with me most, is the fact that it's all encompassing when you're there. Everything fits the theme. Right. A lot of courses you go to, and it's your general run of the mill, like you said, maybe your calligraphy or your three letters, you know, for the course.
Locking letters. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And I hate to say, I hate to say Instagrammable, you know, because it's like so new age, and although that, what a complete hypocrite, because, you know, that's where my market is. But, you know, it's one of those things that just shows so well on everything. And I'm super excited to see where you go forward with that stuff. And speaking of that, I wonder if you can give us a little insight into maybe 2024 and beyond with Todd Hill, maybe the marketing, maybe the courses, you know, where do we go from here?
Well, we're super excited. I mean, that we've far exceeded our initial projections for the back half of 2023. And, you know, we are, what's so great about Todd Hill, which was, you know, so amazing how, you know, sometimes time can be harmful to you in the golf industry. In our case, it's kind of worked out really, really, really well, because this new Instagram golf travel nerd, like you call it earlier, you know, just you're so into architecture and the hang and the experience, and it's about time with your buddies. It's not about what I shot. It's not about getting beat up on a tougher golf course or something that may seem to be tough. It's just about being with your friends. And so that's what we're really pushing forward into 2024 is, you know, Todd, we want Todd Hill to be a club of friends. We want you to come back and you feel like cheers, right? Everybody knows your name. It's something that we count our customers as just special, special people, not just a dollar coming through the door. And so you're going to hear that kind of woven throughout the fabric of what Todd Hill is and what it's going to be become, I should say, in that, you know, when you show up to Todd Hill with your friends, you're going to feel like you've been there a million times. You're going to feel appreciated and loved and welcome. And, you know, we want everybody to have that type of experience. If you're going to come spend those dollars with us and spend a day with us, we're going to be family. And we mentioned this at the Iron Maverick event back in October. That was a huge hit. So many guys from out of state come to play, and they felt that. And they so many people mentioned that upon leaving, like, we just feel at home here. And yeah. So we feel like that's going to help us a lot. We're only, you know, 20 years ago, you wouldn't have thought of pulling off the interstate, going to Pinehurst or Myrtle Beach, coming down 73, 74, and playing tied to a farm. You just seemed like, well, that's 15 minutes off the road. I don't want to bother. We just want to get to our destination. Now, all the packagers in Pinehurst, and we're starting to build some alliances in Myrtle Beach to play Todd Hill on the way in or on the way home from those locations. If you're not willing to kind of, especially from Pinehurst, you're not willing to drive 45 minutes up to Todd Hill in the middle of a stay in Pinehurst, play us.
Well,
on the
you
way
guys,
down.
You guys are the destination now. You know, you've turned it into the destination.
Right. And, you know, that's what we've said. It's a bucket list destination golf experience. And it's something that you're going to want to play. And, you know, we don't care when you play. You know, it may work best to play on the front end, the back end of a trip, going to those two locations. Or, you know, if you're staying in Pinehurst, worth the drive 45 minutes up. I know when I went to Ireland back in 2000, most days we drove well over an hour to get to our golf courses. And we didn't care because we knew what we were about to play.
Yeah.
And that's what I keep preaching to the guys in the shop. And I think all the customers are starting to say that I would drive from anywhere to play this place. And so that's what, we're so proud of the fact that in a very short period of time, we've been able to accomplish that kind of mindset and what we're trying to deliver. So I think the future is going to be bright in that regard. I think the hang and hanging out behind 18, we're talking about, you know, creating something there around that barn and the 18th green, whether it's some Adirondack chairs and, you know, on really busy days, having a bar set up there and folks can hang out behind that green. You know, I don't know if we make a heckle deck out there like Sweetens has or some of the other properties we're doing. But, you know, we all of that's on the table because we've got room and we've got the capability and we've got the facilities to do it. And so I think there's just so much more yet to come. And we're so excited. You know, it's kind of like, all right, which do we do next? Yeah. Which piece is going to really take it further over the top that golfers are just going to want to, you know, say that we cannot come this close and not play this place.
Yeah, I mean, not only do you have the room and the facilities, but you have the passionate people behind it, right? Which is what, you know, makes the engine work. And you've got kind of that field of dreams issue now, right? If you restore it, they will come. And they're coming. And it's been phenomenal. And you know, I can tell people firsthand all about it. You know, just go back, listen to episode 207. I mean, I rave about it, and I don't do that often. Most people will say to me, man, you're real cynical. Like, you must hate everything. And there are a lot of things I hate. But when I love something, you know, like, I am passionate about that. And you guys are doing just a phenomenal job there. So before we get you out of here, Robbie, let people know where they can, you know, book tee times, book packages. Find out information on the course, find the merchandise on the course even.
Okay. So yes, you can go to, you know, tothillfarm.com, T-O-T, hillfarm.com, and book tee times there. We do not book packages as of yet. We are not in that business. You know, we're focused on building the golf experience there and leaving the packaging to the experts down in Pinehurst. And just about every packager down there, probably with the exception of Pinehurst Resort, because they're doing all their own stuff, you know, is booking into Tidehill Farm and booking in quite heavily. And it's tremendous looking at the pre-bookings for 24 and especially around the U.S. Open coming next June. So definitely want to get on the books with them sooner than later. If you think you're going to be coming through the area at any time, just call us or book your tee time at the website, tidehillfarm.com. There's where you'll find our online store link as well over to our Shopify store, which we are getting loaded up with more. We put straight down apparel up there today that's going to be launching tomorrow morning. So we'll have a lot more product tomorrow. And then we've got some really cool hats coming with some of those. We got the Strance Salamander icon. We got Strance's logo that he used for his business on the side of these hats. Some really cool looks coming over the next couple of weeks as well. But yeah, check with your packagers in Pinehurst if you want to add Todd Hill to one of your packages, or just call the golf shop or book a tee time online. If you're coming through the area, it's 10 minutes off the main interstate that takes you straight to Pinehurst and Myrtle Beach. So it couldn't be easier to get to.
Awesome. Well, Robbie, thank you so much for your time. Please extend, you know, a heartfelt thank you to Greg as well for coming on and just talking about, in my opinion, the most fun course that I've played this year.
Well, Dan, it's a pleasure and honor. I appreciate you having us on, and so glad we could spend this time together, and so glad that you and your boys could come experience it on a good day. I look forward to having you back when everything's green back up and the leaves are on the trees again, and you can just see all the beauty of Strantz in full bloom. But appreciate all you're doing for the golf business as well, and your pod, and you're doing great things, and just keep up the good work, and we'll continue following along, and appreciate your kind words, and look forward to seeing you again real soon down the road at the farm, buddy.
Thank you, sir. And I'm going to take you up on that. Don't worry about
anytime.
That.
Anytime. Your family now, Dan, your family. Anytime, bud.
All right, people. So either get busy golfing or get busy dying.
Absolutely. It depends on the COR of the flagstick. So the coefficient restitution flagstick. In U.S. Opens, I'll take it out. And every other tour event, when it's fiberglass, I'll leave it in and bounce that ball against the flagstick if I need to.
Swannies is here with a fresh take. Performance-based materials are a given these days. But if you're looking for the stretchiest and most lightweight pieces that deliver a look that says I'm here for a good time, take a walk on the Swannies side. With fabric sourced from recycled plastics and design sourced from our very own Weekend Warriors, Swannies is looking out for both our planet and those that need a little style to boost their drive another 15 yards. Premium looks from top to bottom at swannies.com.
Podcast patrons, Leave the Pin Podcast is super stoked to have Gashouse Golf as their official clothing sponsor for the podcast. Go to gashousegolf.com, find them on all forms of social media at Gashouse Golf. Gashouse makes affordable, eye-catching, one-of-a-kind polos that help you stand out from the crowd. Why spend $75, $100, or even more on polos that make you look like everybody else when you can get one at an affordable price from Gashouse Golf? Hit the ball a mile and look damn good doing it.